It's very good to be with you this Sunday. It's always good to come to Kingston Baptist Church. I haven't been here for a couple of years, but I'm very grateful for the invitation from Martin to preach on this morning and the occasion of the farewell of Martin and Margaret. The philosopher of the Enlightenment, Immanuel Kant, writing in the late 18th century, posed three fundamental questions for our life, and they are perennial questions. What can I know? What must I do? And what may I hope for? You could spend your whole life working on those three questions. The first 100 years are the hardest. The first one, what can I know? Kant said, well, actually, not much for certain, but probabilities are the name of the game. Such is life. We live with so many probabilities. The second one, what must I do? Very much a question of listening to the moral imperative, the duty that drives us, that informs our decisions in our life, gives us direction. We find something within us, embedded deeply in our psyche, in our being, that calls us to a particular task and duty. And the third, what may I hope for, I think is probably the most interesting, most important, and perhaps the most problematic question. What indeed may we hope for? These days, the mantra seems to be, well, we hope that we'll be happy. We want to be happy. Parents say, well, we want our children to be happy. Children say, yeah, I'd like to be happy. In another earlier age, there was not such a same question. It was more, we want to be able to make it through. We want to find some resilience in life. My mother-in-law, who died some years ago at the ripe old age of 97, had a conversation along these lines with myself and other members of our family some years ago, and we said, what was it like when you were growing up? Born at the end of the First World War, through the Great Depression, into the Second World War? And her answer was, well, it was never a question, would I be happy? But would I make it? Where would I find the inner resilience to live a life worthy of the life and vocation I'm called? So what is it to be? To be happy? Is that what we hope for? To be resilient? In the modern education world, resilience is the new thing, as if it's just been discovered. But there's a reason why it's now important, because the question of happiness is much more problematic. Or is it something else? Be courageous. Is that what we might hope for? Or be faithful? So what would you say today? As individuals, what might we hope for our community life, for this church, Kingston Baptist? What may we hope for the country of Australia? It is indeed a perennial question, and it's a haunting one. Tomorrow is Armistice Day, Remembrance Day, the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month to mark the cessation of hostilities on the Western Front, the First World War. A seed of hope was planted, but it didn't grow for very long. We hoped for peace, but it has not come to fruition. The question of what we may hope for is one that arises often in the most difficult and trying of circumstances of life. Sometimes our way is not clear, The possibility of hope seems forlorn or remote. Sometimes through these great tribulations, we discover remarkable resources and hope is renewed. It comes from, like magic, from nowhere. There is no blueprint. There are scattered clues. This rather long introduction takes us to the book of, how do we say it? The prophet Haggai. Thank you for saying that. I'm never quite sure how to pronounce any of these Old Testament names. Enter Haggai. Not one of the most well-known of prophets of ancient Israel. There he is in the lections for this Sunday. An obscure blast from the past. Or perhaps a voice worth listening to just for a moment on this Sunday at this time. Haggai is one of the 12 or minor prophets that have been referred to. Approximately 520 before the Common Era, BC, during the reign of King Darius, king of Persia, the exiles have returned to Israel. They've been in forced exile in Babylon for many decades. They have returned to a place that is, alas, a shadow of its former glory. And the great work ahead of them is reconstructing their life, their homes, their networks, their communities, and above all, the holy place, the temple, the sacred dwelling of Yahweh. In other words, they've come back as exiles, returnees, for a time of reconstruction. And all this is undertaken, if you can imagine, carrying some of the trauma that they bring with them from the past. Who are they indeed? Do they have a history that they can rest upon and gives them some sense of strength and resilience for the present? What can they know really about their past life? What must they do to produce a thriving community in the present? And probably most importantly, now that this has all happened, what may we hope for? Is God still with us? Do we have to go it alone, abandoned? So this is the context for our reading today. First thing they want to do is build our own homes, which is fair enough. But the temple, maybe this is a bridge too far. The once glorious Temple of Solomon has been reduced to ruins, and it's hard to rebuild. And who cares anyway? Who cares? Have you ever been so tired and someone says, well, you're going to do this, and you say, I don't care? Have you ever tried that out? They say, but you must care. I said, no, can't care. I've lost all my care. Care factor is zero. I've had to listen to that as our teenagers grew up. So I started practicing it back to them. Who cares anyway if we have to rebuild the temple? We'll never be able to restore it to its former glory. We can't do that. It's too big. It's too hard. It's too depressing. We've been in, by the way, Babylon for decades, and we've got along okay without a temple. So why do we have to build one now? So there's a lot of mixed emotions from these people. And the prophet speaks a word to them. Who is left among you that saw this house in its former glory? Who of you who are very old were once upon a time those that actually walked around the precincts of the great Temple of Solomon? In its former glory, you have seen it. Who among you is left? How does it look to you now? In ruins, of course. Is it not in yours as nothing? This is the thing about the prophet. We have a rather fantasy notion of the prophets that see into the future and look at their crystal ball and know how it's all going to appear and then speak to it. Usually the prophets were never quite as remarkable in the way they saw into the future. They simply spoke the word for the present. The prophets weren't killed because they looked into the future and imagined another world. They were killed because they spoke the bleeding obvious in the present, and nobody wanted to know. Haggai names what is the case. Look at what you have got before you. It is as nothing, don't you think? Some are depressed at what has been lost. Some are overwhelmed with the task ahead. Some have just given up. Maybe they've just made a virtue out of their lot in life. Well, let's go for second best. We've tried out all these options ourselves, haven't we? We do. And as I pondered the text from Haggai for this morning, I thought there is a contemporary ring about so much in our society today. There are so many things happening, and the question of hope is one of the fundamental issues that really presses in on us. What indeed may we hope for the world that is emerging? One thing for certain, prophets are most unwelcome. Now, the irony in this text is that the prophet Haggai offers a word of hope to the governor of the people. There's that lovely word, Zerubbabel. Now, if you practice that one about six times, it just rolls off the tongue. A very onomatopoeia kind of word, Zerubbabel. Take courage, he says. And to the priest Joshua, he says, take courage. And to the people of the land, those that usually are struggling to find a hopeful sign in anything, take courage. To these different strata of society, he says the same word, take courage. Fine words, but for what purpose? And the prophet says, take courage, work. Get on with it. That's my gloss on this. Work. Do the thing. Stop complaining. Stop being depressed. Stop murmuring, mumbling. Work. A daunting task it may seem to reconstruct society, reconstruct their communities. Take courage and work. As I was thinking this, I thought how hard it is at times to stick at a task when it feels overwhelming. A project that we've set our hand to the plough and we don't think we can complete. At a personal level, years ago in the United Kingdom, trying to finish a major project, a thesis, and I said at the 8 o'clock, and I think people understood. I felt like I was in Babylon and I was supposed to be in the land of plenty, in paradise. I couldn't finish the task. My cunning plan was simple. I must invent an escape route. It's a cunning plan. Anywhere, I know, I'll talk to the bishop and maybe he might give me a parish. I'll escape into a parish. Well, I heard another word from my friends, and therefore I took it as a word from on high. Stephen, stop complaining, stop mumbling, take courage, finish it. Work. I love friends sometimes. One step at a time, finish the task. And finally I did that. After many years of failure. But why? What keeps us going when we think that we've got to keep on going? What keeps you going in some of the most difficult things that you are challenging you? The prophet Haggai speaks to the rulers and the people. He says, I am with you, Lord of hosts. And then he says, a justification or a warrant for that statement. I am with you, says God. According to the promise that I made you when you came out of Egypt. There is no wriggle room here. It's very concrete. According to the promise that I made to you, that I pledged to you when you came out of Egypt. Now there is a direct appeal to the people to remember the covenant that the faithful God gave for a long time ago, the pledge from an earlier time, a defining moment for those people in the nation's history, indeed a defining moment for the creation of Israel. Here is the for the exhortation and the encouragement. It goes back to a founding act of liberation, of calling the people out of slavery into a new world. The source of the present grounds for hope and sticking to the task is located in a past event. And so we look down the history of our own lives and think of the ways in which the good God might have given us strength at a time, and we feed off that, we live off that for the present and the future. It's something that gives substance to the things hoped for. How often we need to be reminded in our lives and our communities and our churches of the faithfulness of God just when we had given up. The prophet speaks a word of hope, and the word is clear. Haggai says again, "Of the Lord, my spirit abides in you. Do not fear. My spirit abides in you. Do not fear." I don't know about you, but fear has is a paralysis. When you're frightened, well, some people, when they're frightened and anxious, wind up. They can't stop. You may be married to one. Some people, when they're anxious and fearful, they're paralyzed. They can't do anything. You're married to one. It's really interesting when you put those kind of two people together. Fear is a paralysis for communities. It prevents redemptive action. In our contemporary society, fear is a marketer's delight. Sow the seeds of fear and insecurity, and you can kill off any constructive action that people might wish to pursue. And the list is long in this country right now of things that people are made to be afraid of people, of situations. If we heed to the voices of some who would sow fear, the question is always, who benefits? Who benefits? Haggai is not a prophet of fear, but of hope. And so it gets to this at the end of the text. The temple will be rebuilt. God will be faithful. God has not deserted the people. Yahweh is in the midst, willing the work to achieve its goal. The former glory of the temple will be nothing compared to the coming splendor. And the Lord will give prosperity and peace. Indeed, the treasure of all the nations will come and fill the house. The silver and gold belongs to God. Some interpreters have become quite anxious about this. It seems somewhat ominous. The nations' gold and silver will come to Jerusalem. Is this a sign of foreboding, of coming wars and plunder? Or is it a sign that the nations will wake up one day and see that the Yahweh is God, the one God to be worshipped, and come to the temple and bring their gifts? It's unclear, except for one word or phrase that comes from the prophet's mouth. I will shake the nations. I will shake the nations. There will be, says Haggai, a great disturbance initiated by God. All things will be turned upside down. It's what the Lord does to the well-off, the comfortable, the assured, always disturbing the comforting, the comfortable, and always comforting the disturbed. For what purpose does God shake the nations? Simply to make it clear that everything belongs ultimately to the Lord, who is Lord over all things. People, land, treasures, nation states, sovereign powers, dictators, despots, the greedy and the self-righteous. The shaking of God occurs in manifold ways. As the prophet says, "For thus says the Lord, once again, I will shake the heavens and the earth, and the seas and the dry land." I was really taken by that text. Once again, I will shake the heavens and the earth, the seas and the dry land. this weekend at the Australian Centre for Christianity and Culture, which is not far from you, and indeed has been a place that Kingston Baptist has been supporting for many years, I have to say. There is the first NAC conference of the Australian Religious Response to Climate Change. There is a shaking of the heavens and the earth taking place right now. And people from all different faith traditions and none are gathered there this weekend. 20 of them. We are at a critical time in the shaking of the earth. Is this the work of God? We need to be, I think, quite wise about these things. The divine shaking is usually indirect. As if God, in God's wisdom and mercy, simply allows the folly of human beings to slowly unravel and become manifest. The shaking is usually indirect. So this day, this Sunday, what may we hope for? What do you hope for? It is a question for our own lives. It is a question for our churches. It is a question for this nation of Australia. And perhaps there is another question, which is its brother or sister. What responsibility do I have? We have. What responsibility do we have to bring such a hope that we harbour and hold on to? What responsibility do we have to bring it to fruition under the guidance and the discipline of the Spirit of God and in conformity to Jesus Christ? And as we ponder this, we hear the words of the prophet Haggai from 2.5 millennia ago. Take courage, work, I am with you, my Spirit abides with you. To him be praised now and forever. Amen.